Hello. Hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy for Saturday, March 10th. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois, on the second Saturday of each month. Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy is an interactive, live, internet talk radio show that focuses on how to take advantage of the opportunities that life sends your way. The program explores obstacles overcome by ordinary people with extraordinary results, and what inspires or motivates them to take positive actions that make their dreams a reality. I know a little about that myself, as I've had 10 careers. I started as a fashion model, then I was a rock and roll singer, a corporate consultant, an adjunct professor, and today I'm a professional speaker, author, coach, blogger, and radio show host. Let's set the tone for today's program. Every great dream begins with a dreamer. Always remember, you have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars to change the world. Harriet Tubman said that. Today's show is brought to you by Budgetpreneur.com. If you find that you have very little money to invest in your business and still need time and ways to get things done, then stop putting those things off. Go to Budgetpreneur.com. They provide the resources and tools to help you manage your business, save money, and increase revenue. Visit www.budgetpreneur.com and become a member today. Okay, let's get started. And by the way, if you're listening online and call in to ask a question, please mute your computer first, and the number to call in is 646-381-4198. As usual, we have a fantastic show, and today it's an extraordinary show. Our topic is how one woman went back to college after a 14-year break, went to law school, and became a law firm partner. That is our guest, and our guest today is Devorah L. Lindemann, a partner at Greenwald Doherty LLP, a labor and employment law firm exclusively representing management in relationships with employees and unions. Her firm has offices in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, and she is admitted to practice law in New York and New Jersey. Let me introduce her to you and share a little bit about her background. Devorah Lindemann says that you can do anything you want if you set your mind to it. She has had many lives in this lifetime, from being a dancer and choreographer to working in the nonprofit sector, to becoming and being a legal secretary, a paralegal, and finally a law firm partner. Although her resume would not show it, she took a 14-year break between her junior and senior years in college and went back to finish college when she decided to go to law school at age 34. At that time, she was married and raising two daughters, but she and her husband decided that she should stop working and go back to school full-time, and her dedication paid off. She is also a nationally acknowledged authority on cases relating to religious discrimination in the workplace. Ms. Lindemann publishes and lectures widely on the legal aspects of human resource issues and provides compliance and management training for businesses and professional organizations. She's a regular contributor to websites like humanresourcesiq.com, overtimeadvisor.com, and the employeetestingcenter.com hiring tips. She seeks to educate employers regarding their compliance obligation to prevent problems before they start. She actually received her undergraduate degree from Sarah Lawrence College and graduated from Rutgers School of Law, Newark, with highest honors, and during law school, she served as the notes and comments editor for the Rutgers Law Review. On graduation, she was inducted into both the Order of the Coif and the Order of the Barrister, and she then clerked for the Honorable Stanley Chester, USMJ in the District of New Jersey. When she went back to college 14 years later, she actually decided to go to law school after exploring quite a few different careers. And she was just a few months shy of her 39th birthday when she graduated from law school. So it sounds a little accelerated to me. At that time, her two girls were 12 and 7. This is an extraordinary woman we have as our guest today. Welcome, Devorah.
Hi, Yvonne. Thank you so much for inviting me to join you.
It's a pleasure. Why did you drop out of college in the first place? I'm curious. I'm sure our listeners are, too.
Well, we have to go back in time quite a while. This was the end of the 1970s. I had a summer job with a nonprofit organization, and they asked me to stay at the end of the summer. I would have gone back to school to finish my senior year, but at that time, I had a lot of friends who had graduated college, and they didn't have jobs yet. And here I was with a job and a job offer, and I quite honestly didn't see any need to go to college. To me, college should be information you need in order to do something with it. That's not to negate someone who wants to go to college for learning's sake and really loves the learning process. But on the other hand, for a lot of people, college becomes a sort of waste of time. And since I had a job, I didn't drop out of college. I failed to go back to college because I had a job.
That's interesting, especially in today's world.
Right.
So that said, then, what made you decide to go back to law school?
Well, fast forward a whole lot of years, and I was working for my father, who was a small-town attorney, as first a legal secretary and then a paralegal. He actually trained me on the job to become a paralegal and help him in his work. One day, he turned to me and said, "I wish I could send you to this deposition in this case. I've just got too much to do." But taking a deposition, which is a questioning, a time for the parties to ask questions of the other side when you're in the middle of a lawsuit, you can only do depositions if you're an actual lawyer. You can't do that as a paralegal. And I turned to him and I said, "Well, you know, if I went back to school and went to law school, I could do that. Could you hold that deposition for 4 years?"
That's interesting. So in a way, the circumstances invited you to go back to law school.
Exactly. But I was working in a law firm, and I loved it. I loved what I was learning. I loved what I thought was the opportunity to help people. And so it seemed like a natural move for me at the time.
How was it going to school full-time and raising your children? I know many audience members are in that same position. Some of them, because they have children, are afraid to go back to school. So how was it to do that full-time and raise children at the same time?
It was challenging. I'll tell you that. It was. I was lucky that I had a support system. My husband was amazing, and he was really there for me every step of the way. My parents also lived close by, so they could help with childcare. But we had one string of babysitters after the other to help with the kids. And I wasn't around as much as I would have liked to have been for my kids, but I think in the long run, it was worth it. You had to have excellent time management skills and be very focused. It forced me to focus on what was important. And there were probably other things that came along that I would have liked to have done, you know, going out and seeing the latest movie or read the latest novel and watched the latest TV show, and I didn't have time to do those things. So I had to make my choices about what was important and what was going to move me along the path that I chose. In fact, I remember my husband in the evening, he'd say to our daughters, first to the first one, "Did you finish your homework?" The next one, "Did you finish your homework?" And then he'd turn to me and say, "Did you finish your homework?"
That's funny. So he was a great support system, and that was a great way of demonstrating, you know, leading by example for your two daughters.
Absolutely. And I'm hoping that they learned something from that.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. And I'm sure the listeners are also learning that having that support system, what I heard was that having that support system, number one, is key. And then on top of that, being able to prioritize and focus. Those other two items are huge.
Those are absolutely incredibly important for anyone that has any sort of dream or goal. Because what happens, I know sometimes, is you put your eye on that goal, but then you get distracted. If you have a goal, you have to keep your eye on it, and you have to keep moving in that direction. And if there are things that aren't contributing to that goal, maybe you have to forego them. And that's a challenge sometimes.
Yes, it is. And you went to Sarah Lawrence, right?
Yes, I did.
I think that's a women's only college?
Actually, it was until the 1960s. It's been co-ed for quite a while.
Oh, how about that?
It was co-ed when I went in the 70s for the first time around, although there were many more women there. When I went back and I graduated in 1991, it was much more even, men and women.
Oh, that's fascinating because today it's skewed the opposite way around. In all colleges, there are more women going to universities than men, which is an interesting turn of events.
It is.
Now, of all the choices of being an attorney that are available, you could be a corporate attorney, you know, you could be any kind of attorney. Why did you decide to become an employment lawyer?
That was a very conscious decision, and that's a very good question, Yvonne. A couple of things happened that pushed me in that direction. First, I said I had worked for my dad, who was a small-town lawyer, and what he did was he did personal injury law, matrimonial law, divorces. He did some trusts and estates, people's wills, things like that, a little real estate, so a little bit of anything that you would need in the town. And he also did some criminal law. I determined after working for him that I really didn't like any of those areas of law. I felt that I couldn't be a criminal lawyer, that you have to have a certain mindset to do that.
Right.
And family law, divorce law was too emotional for me. I wanted something that had a human element, but family law was too much. Instead of, I kind of went through all the types of law, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do when I graduated law school because there were so many things I knew I didn't want to do. I was particularly bad in math, and so I knew that I wasn't going to do anything that involved numbers. But after I graduated from law school, I clerked for Judge Chesler in the District of New Jersey, as you mentioned, and he was a great mentor for me. And one day he sat me down and asked me, when your clerkship's done, what are you going to do? And at that point in time, I wasn't sure. But we talked about the different areas of law, and he suggested employment law to me.
Interesting.
And what made it even more interesting is when I had gone back to Sarah Lawrence to finish my senior year, one of the courses I took was a women's labor history course. And that gave me an essence of what the world of employment dealt with to some degree. And when I took a closer look at it, I saw that employment law had a lot of elements that interested me. I knew I didn't want to be a corporate lawyer, for example, and argue about why didn't the widgets arrive on Wednesday. That, to me, was completely boring. I wanted something that had a human element, but as I said, family law and divorce was too emotional. I didn't think I could deal with it. The thing about employment law is it does deal with real people and real lives, and even though the relationships between an employer and an employee can get to be relatively emotional at times, there still is a degree of distance there, and not everything has that emotion. It was also an area of life that I understood. Because I had worked so many years before I'd gone to law school, the work world was very familiar to me, so I was very comfortable with that. So that's how I wound up as an employment lawyer.
Wonderful. And that ties back to what you said earlier, where you said you knew that what you wanted to do was helping people.
Exactly.
And so that's a complete match for being an employment lawyer, because then what you love to do and what you do for a living are a nice match, which means you can enjoy your work.
Exactly. And I do feel that I am helping employers in my work.
I'm sure you do. I noticed in your bio that it says that you seek to educate employers regarding their compliance obligations to prevent problems before they start. Is there an example of what kind of problem you could give us a quick example of?
Sure. A lot of employers don't know what their legal obligations are when one of their employees becomes pregnant, for example. And how do they deal with a pregnant employee who perhaps wasn't performing appropriately? What do they need to do under the law? The same thing applies with all employees. They don't often understand the obligations they have, but they also sometimes don't understand their rights as employers. And my viewpoint as a lawyer is to help our clients do their business. We want to partner with the employers because they have services to deliver or products to sell, and they want to get on with the business of doing that. And sometimes the U.S. employment laws can be very confusing, and there's a lot of things that they need to comply with, but very often business owners don't know what they are. And so they make a mistake, sometimes honestly or not, and they wind up getting sued by their employees because they did something intentionally or unintentionally. And so if we can educate them in terms of what the laws are, what their obligations are, then we can help employers avoid those lawsuits. But we're also helping the employees because we're not creating situations where we're trying to help our clients create situations where the employees aren't going to want to sue them.
That's wonderful. Now, here's the thing. I noticed also that you did some other kinds of work before that, and that was part of your journey.
Right.
So can you share with the audience what some of the other things were that you did?
Sure. Well, you covered a number of them in the introduction. When I first went to college, I thought I wanted to be a dancer and choreographer. And one of the reasons I went to Sarah Lawrence is because they had such a great arts program. But as I went through the program, I realized that although I was a good dancer, I didn't think I was ever going to be a great dancer. And I'm not the type of person that's going to be happy in the chorus. So I wanted to find a career where I could really shine on my own. Where I wanted to be the star. Everyone wants to be prima ballerina.
Of course they do. Of course they do.
But I realized that that wasn't going to be my role. And so then I worked for quite a number of years at the Celebrity Center in New York City, which is a Church of Scientology center. And while I was working there, I learned a lot of management skills. They have an in-house training program where I learned how to run a bookstore and how to manage their treasury division and other administrative and management skills. And from there, we moved out of state and those whole other things happened. And then when I came back to town is when I joined... I take that back. For a while, I temped because I didn't know what I was going to do. And I read a book called Not Just a Secretary. And I was temping as a secretary, and some of my temp jobs were legal secretaries. And that's when I became working for my dad and trying to figure out what I was going to do. And that book, interestingly, Not Just a Secretary, talked about all the skills a person actually has in life that can add up to something bigger than they are. And it was sort of based on the premise that a secretary is not just a secretary. A secretary organizes and coordinates and analyzes and plans and strategizes and has all these skills. You know, you don't just answer the phone and type letters.
Of course.
So that helped me to broaden my viewpoint and give me the confidence that I could go to law school and be something more.
So do you feel that this journey then helps you to be a better lawyer?
Absolutely. I don't know that I would have survived law school if I had gone through 4 years of college and then go to law school. I think the life experience that I had helped me be both a better student and now a better lawyer.
So why did you choose to represent the businesses instead of the employees, that said?
Now, that's an interesting question. I would have thought, given my background, that I would have represented employees. I always felt that I wanted to fight for what was right, make sure people's rights were respected, and that I would have some kind of career that involved those types of ideology. But when I actually took a look at it, all that what's called a plaintiff-side employment lawyer, someone that represents employees, can do is sue the companies and sue the businesses. But suing them doesn't necessarily get them to change their ways. If I represent them, then they listen to me, and I can tell them what their obligations are under the law. I can teach corporations what the ramifications are when they discriminate against people or harass women or harass minorities, and can give them company training to try to help eradicate those evils from our society from a position where companies are trying to get the job done, and help them to see that sometimes complying with the law is actually in their best interests as well.
That's a very good reason. I really enjoy that, because that puts things in perspective and leads me to my next question, which is about you being a regular contributor to these various websites. Tell us a little bit about how that came to be and what your objectives are when you make your when you write your articles or however you contribute to, for example, Human Resources or the Overtime Advisor.
Interestingly, how I became a contributor to humanresourcesiq.com is a lesson in networking and putting yourself out there. I have a profile on LinkedIn, which is a networking site for people in the business community. And LinkedIn has a section where you can write responses to other members' questions. And there were quite a number of questions in the employment arena, and I would answer their questions on LinkedIn. One of the editors for Human Resources IQ saw one of the answers I wrote on LinkedIn. She contacted me and asked me to write for HRIQ.
Oh, my goodness. I love that, because that brings in not just the element of networking, but also the value that comes from participating in a professional social media network.
Absolutely. It's very important that people who want to expand their businesses, grow their businesses, achieve their dreams, contribute in the industry organizations that are there and that give them opportunities to do exactly that type of thing.
And in fact, that's how we met, and that's how I got the opportunity to interview you for the show.
Exactly.
Because someone on LinkedIn recommended you to be the guest on the show, Maria Marcella.
And I met Maria on LinkedIn.
So did I. She's going to be doing another show for me on the 24th of this month. So listeners, watch for that. I'll be sharing some information about that later.
Yeah, she's great. I'm sure that's going to be wonderful.
Oh, she's very knowledgeable. And she's very well connected. Very, very well connected through LinkedIn. She does the same thing you just described, which is she answers questions. And of course, as your example demonstrates, when you answer the question, it brings you to the people who own websites like the humanresourcesiq.com.
That's right. The other ones, Overtime Advisor is our law firm's blog. So that's one of the blogs that I write for. And the Employee Testing Center was somebody who met me through an employer's association that I spoke to, and he asked me to write for his blog. So again, it's an example of being out there, giving speeches, making yourself well known.
Absolutely. So that actually gives you a much more rounded background and brings you to different audiences, because all of those websites have different audiences that might not have heard of you except through your writing for those websites.
Exactly. We, the lawyers of our law firm, try to do different marketing aspects, because that's important once you get to where you're going, that you keep continuing your journey and see how you can expand it, make more connections, network more, make yourself better known out there, because that's how the business will expand.
Absolutely. Now, we're almost at the end of our show, but I'd like to just read back a couple of the things that I got from your interview so far. First of all, that in order to achieve your dream, you need to have a support structure in place. And then you need to prioritize the things in your life in order to make sure you focus like a laser beam on your objectives. And you need to know what you want. I mean, at first you said you started knowing what you didn't want, and then you were able to narrow that down to what you do want and connect it with something that you're passionate about, which is helping people. Then, of course, building a network and connecting with others helps you, your business, your career, your brand, to get the word out there and meet other people.
That's a great summary. That's exactly right. And through that whole journey and that laser beam, I wound up at Greenwald Doherty, the labor and employment law firm, in 2007. And just last year, in 2011, I became a partner.
Congratulations. Your hard work has paid off.
Thank you. Yes, it did. And the thing is, anyone can do it. Whatever their dream is, whatever their goal is, all you have to do is set your mind to it. Doesn't mean there aren't going to be challenges or even huge roadblocks sometime. But if you keep your eye on that goal, then that's giving you all the more opportunity to get there.
Do you have any closing comments?
I guess it's actually the title of your show, because you can find yourself and live your dreams and be happy. That's real, and it can be real for a lot of people if they put their mind to it and if they don't listen to the people in their lives that are negative. Very often we have people around us who they're quote-unquote trying to help us, but really their negativity is just poison. It's like having a cancer around you. And if you don't listen to those people who tell you you can't do it, and surround yourself with supportive people who tell you you can, then you have a much better chance of achieving your goal.
Well put. Thank you so much for the inspirational interview, Devorah.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been my pleasure.
And thanks to all of you for listening to the Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you from Chicago, Illinois, and I'll see you next month on the second Saturday at 2 p.m. Central Time. Until then, I'll leave you with this thought for the day. Some people give up their dreams when they have almost reached the goal, while others, on the contrary, obtain a victory by exerting at the last moment more vigorous efforts than before. Polybius said that. Remember to always join us on the second Saturday each month, and in the meantime, visit us online at blogtalkradio.com/Yvonne-F-Brown to share your comments about today's show. While you're there, become a friend of the show and use the comment box to provide us with some feedback on today's show. Thanks again, Devorah, and I look forward to speaking with you again very soon.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks again.
Thank you for joining us today. If you have a topic that you would like to learn more about, please send it to me at Yvonne@YvonneFBrown.com. You may also use the contact page at www.YvonneFBrown.com, YvonneFBrown.com, to share your comments about today's program or to ask me a question. Until next time, this is Yvonne Brown saying, each day you have the opportunity to get out there on life's playing field or sit on the sideline. It's always more rewarding to get in the game and play.